Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. Lee, this is going to be a fantastic segment. You know, we had a gentleman in here a few weeks ago from the manufacturing arena, which, I mean, you know, we have to be honest about it. We know almost nothing about that whole world.
We're learning.
We have the new Supply Chain Now series, so we're bumping up against it a little bit, and we're learning. We had that gentleman in who, they have their own radio show, Tim Grady, and that crowd. And as a result of us being out there having some of these conversations, it was a distinct pleasure to hear from this lady. So without further ado, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast CEO of Pragmatic, Miss Andrea Olson. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. Great to be here.
Well, Andrea, can you share a little bit about Pragmatic? What are you doing for folks?
Well, sure. Pragmatic is an operations consulting firm, and we specialize in customer-facing operations. So anything that deals with the customer, from sales to marketing, customer service, that even can include logistics and data infrastructure. So our goal is to help companies streamline what they're doing to differentiate more effectively and communicate with customers more effectively as well.
And that's in the manufacturing arena?
Yes, we specialize in manufacturing, and we do have clients within the tech space and the professional services space.
Now, are there kind of unique challenges when you're trying to grow that mid-market manufacturing?
You know, manufacturing, I'd say, is the hardest industry today, and specifically because so many things are changing within manufacturing. If you think about the climate, the political culture that's going on, in addition to now this first move of reshoring back into the United States, the environment has changed dramatically. And in addition to that, technology is now dramatically changing how manufacturing operates. If you're talking about Internet of Things, you're talking about 3D printing, you're talking about robotics, all these things are changing the old guard and the way manufacturing operates as an industry.
Now, it's not your grandparents' manufacturing plant, right? It's not where the people are coming out covered in grease and head to toe. Those days are coming to an end, you think?
You know, I would say that it's still going to be a long curve before that is completely gone. If you think about some traditional operations, such as a forging company, those types of processes are still somewhat dank and dirty and quite manual. But the challenge is that technology has really advanced how some things can be produced, not only from speed, but how safe and how efficient that product can be created. So that old day perception of how manufacturing can be maybe a blue collar job, maybe a dirty job, maybe something that has limited growth is going away quickly.
Now, are you finding that because of maybe the impact of technology and maybe because of the you don't need the brute strength maybe you required back in the day, that it's opening up opportunities for more women to get involved in manufacturing?
Oh, most definitely. You know, a lot of the jobs in manufacturing that aren't promoted or spoken about are all those infrastructure components. If you think about a manufacturing company, they need accounting, they need marketing, they need engineers for product development, they need quality assurance people, they need customer service, they need the entire gamut. And manufacturing as a whole has typically promoted the physical workforce, the welders, the CNC machine operators, and not the complete suite of potential roles that every manufacturer needs.
And is this something that maybe manufacturing industry needs a little bit of rebranding in order to, you know, attract more female workers?
Oh, it's excellent you say that, because I believe that's completely true. I think that manufacturers, especially within the mid-market, are really limiting themselves by the message they're putting out. And part of this challenge, especially in that middle segment, is that a lot of these folks, their second, third, fourth generation owners, have not modernized their infrastructure or processes. So if you think about going into any manufacturing facility, sometimes the office might look like it's right out of 1975. Mm-hmm. They might be using an infrastructure for data that's Excel spreadsheets. I've seen people still using faxes and carbon paper. And email is really sometimes only utilized on a limited scale. So if you think about the competition and you think about the requirements of large OEMs that want purchasing a lot more automated, that want communication a lot more automated, it's going to be harder and harder for these mid-market manufacturers not only to compete, but actually secure the talent they need to grow.
And then we talked about talent being women, but also attracting the millennials to manufacturing must be a challenge as well.
Yes. And the lack of embracing technology is one of the key components. Because if you think about these millennials being 18 to 34, the challenge is if you're using, let's say, an ERP system or a data infrastructure to manage your operations, that's, let's say, in an old blue screen terminal with the yellow lettering, this existed before these people were even born. And so for them to actually go back and learn this very old technology not only is difficult, but it's also not a portable skill. They're used to different interfaces, they're used to different operating systems, and for them to adapt to that and then have something that they can't take somewhere else is of little value.
Now, are you finding that these mid-market manufacturers, are they open to this type of change? Because this must be a sea change for some of them.
That, I think, is the rub. The rub is that some see the change and have a hard time understanding how to go about implementing that change, especially for those organizations that have been in their status quo mode for decades. So even if the CEO or the leader of the organization is looking to make that change, sometimes the culture of the organization has not been used to continual change. And so something like that, something as massive as an infrastructure change, is going to really upset the apple cart. And then culturally, the organization starts to resist those changes. So it's a double-edged sword. If the organization doesn't want to change, they'll obsolete themselves. But if the leadership wants to change and the organizational culture does not, it's the same challenge.
So now how do you kind of create baby steps for them they have to change. I mean, change is going to occur whether they want to or not. So
right.
It's better they
right.
are proactive about it than reactive. So how do you kind of create that conversation, at least to get something going, to at least test it or pilot or do it in a small scale so that it can kind of spread throughout the organization?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. I think that, you know, over the last few decades, there's been a wave of technology come and gone. And there's a lot of new technology, especially in the social network aspect and the marketing side of things, mm-hmm. that manufacturers really have a hard time understanding how to fold into their business. And so a big portion of it is education, but the second portion of it is really understanding their business and their P&L and saying, what can we do today that's going to impact that, that's going to raise the bottom line? Because they don't have a lot of wiggle room to invest in technology oftentimes, or even a massive change that doesn't have at least a short-term return. And then they have to have a strategy in place for long-term growth and development.
Right. And that they can't be wrong. They can't invest in the wrong stuff. And it's
right.
changing so rapidly now, it's hard to know which is going to be a fad and which is going to stick around for a while.
Exactly. So that kind of puts people in this little cycle of not taking any action. They're completely stagnant because of that fear of making the wrong decision or putting the money in the wrong place and not having that fulfill their needs. And because of that lack of wiggle room, if everyone becomes immobile.
Now, are you able to have these kind of strategic conversations with your clients or prospective clients?
Yes. I mean, that's what we mostly center our efforts on, is really talking through what their business challenges are. We've had a lot of companies that will come in and look at tactical things. And they'll say, well, you know what? Our sales are down. We need a website. And oftentimes they're looking too narrow at the problem, or they're not looking at the right problem. In this scenario, if they say they're looking for a website, you back that out and you find out that there are certain product lines that are down. They maybe lost a key account or a key OEM. They haven't diversified their sales portfolio in a long time. They haven't looked at online sales in different channels. And that could be their own website. That could be Amazon.com. They might not have an effective fulfillment process. They might have sales focused in the wrong area in a non-growing industry, even though that's their bread and butter. So we try to look at it holistically and say, what do we need to do strategically to start growing the business? Because when you say you need a website, you believe that that's going to be the key to success in growing sales. But oftentimes, you have to back that up into bigger problems that are systemic to the organization.
And sometimes if you do a good job with marketing, you could be creating a bigger problem if they have operational issues.
Exactly. So you have to truly understand how the organization functions. You can't really just throw out, let's say, a marketing campaign for product X, and then that influx of sales or inquiries might really dry up quickly if fulfillment isn't clear, if customer service is inept, if sales doesn't follow through. All these components, it works as an entire ecosystem.
So do you have a sweet spot in your consultancy? Are you working with marketing more, operations more, or across the board?
We tend to work with primarily sales, marketing, and then I'd say data infrastructure. And I say that because oftentimes manufacturers and many other companies do as well work in silos. And no matter what the best strategy you put out there, if the communication between those departments and that organizational system isn't flowing, then there is a breakdown and you don't see the big return that you had planned on.
Now, at the mid-market level, how robust is their marketing arm usually?
Oh, you know, usually robust is a funny word because oftentimes it can be one individual. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a part-time individual where their primary job is just general administration. And when we say mid-market, we're talking anywhere from 10 million to, let's say, about 500 million. Mm-hmm. Once you start getting into the larger ones, they do have small departments, they have teams, and sometimes they outsource some tactical work. But really, the key thread is that there is no infrastructure of strategic vision for marketing. Marketing oftentimes simply serves sales. And without marketing understanding how the business is profitable, what products are profitable, what opportunities are there in the market, are there other industry verticals that we haven't attacked that we could, that are in growth mode? This is the role of marketing, and how marketing can help grow the bottom line is just managing trade shows and creating brochures.
Is that what a lot of your work is kind of helping them strategically think of a kind of, like you mentioned, a holistic view of marketing, maybe have a calendar for the year rather than just a tactic for the quarter?
Yes, exactly. So we try to say, how can marketing not only be a profit center to the organization, but help reduce operational costs and improve efficiency? So that can range the gamut from maybe it's a time trial of how many steps does it take to fulfill a customer issue? And what is the cost of that? And what's the downstream cost of that customer issue, whether it was an issue with a guarantee or a warranty? So there are things that marketing can influence that might not be that traditional promotional viewpoint that people take of marketing.
Can you share a success story where you helped somebody maybe rethink their marketing, where they went for something that was maybe basic and you were able to kind of level them up a little bit?
Why, sure. We're actually underway with an active client right now that's a manufacturer here in the Midwest. And they actually have somewhat of a commodity product. And they came to us with that same story. They said, you know what, we need a website. We want to start selling online, because sales is overwhelmed by smaller transactional orders. So we actually stepped back and looked and developed a strategy for them, because we found out that sales was utilizing most of their time, over 90% of their time, with one and two orders, you know, little small transactions that you had to coordinate with the customer, you had to coordinate with logistics, you had to get shipping quotes and go back and forth. And they weren't spending time with large corporate accounts, and they had no corporate account strategy. So we actually worked to develop that and find industry focuses that were growing that they could really actually gain market share and redevelop sales to focus on those areas, have a different approach to corporate accounts, and then use actually Amazon fulfillment services for the small individual transactions. And that the website will center on an educational tool that sales can use in the sales process.
Now, you mentioned trade shows earlier. Is that an area that is a popular marketing channel for a lot of mid-market manufacturers?
Yes. It's kind of the de facto marketing tool. Outside of brochures and collateral, the primary tool, marketing tool for manufacturers, tends to be trade shows and conferences.
Now, how do you help them get the most out of a trade show? Because I've attended lots, and I'm sure you have as well, where you got to protect your client from being the booth where everybody's just sitting there on their phone texting or playing with a squishy ball.
Right. You know, trade shows are tricky because, you know, it's easy to feel like you get that one big client out of that trade show and it pays for the entire trade show. Right. But oftentimes, most companies really don't look at total rolled costs of trade shows. And that's not just the drayage and the signage, but it's the people time that are away from the office or away from meeting other customers. And the question is, how much do you need to invest in a trade show? Do you need a 60 by 60 booth, or is a 20 by 20 booth sufficient? Is it more sufficient for having salespeople to walk the trade show and prospect? Or is that trade show strategy really a meeting place for existing customers? And if it's a meeting place for existing customers, which is oftentimes the case, then you can rearrange that booth structure to reduce that cost significantly and spend time meeting and talking with customers and setting up agreements or whatever your strategy is there. So trade shows can be utilized in the right way, but it seems to be more of a spray and pray approach where if we just go to a whole bunch of trade shows, we'll land a fish somewhere.
And that goes to your earlier point about the importance of looking at your business strategically and not just tactically.
Exactly. I think an old adage that a friend of mine said to me a long time ago was, would you bet your paycheck on it? If it was your own money and not the company's money, would you make that investment as a business person? And I think that's a question that sometimes is often lost.
Right. And sometimes people go to trade shows just because if they don't, they feel like, you know, people think they're out of business.
Right. And that's really not a strategy. You know, if you're there to impress your competitors, that's a whole different story.
Exactly. Now, earlier you mentioned customer-facing operations. Can you talk about that in the realm of manufacturing? How important is that?
You know, manufacturers have tended to live in the world of order delivery, right? They have an OEM or a large customer. They say they need 1,000 of these widgets. They make that widget, they deliver that widget, and they feel that that is the heart of their business. But especially with advanced technology and communications changing and how people communicate nowadays, the customer-facing aspect of the business has dramatically changed. Companies are not just simply looking for the lowest cost product. They're looking at organizations that can help them do business more efficiently and effectively and reduce their own cost of operations. So, for example, if you have a large company with a purchasing department and it takes 15 steps for them to process an order with you and you can cut that in half, that saves them money. It makes doing business with you much easier and much more appealing. If you can automate things, if you can provide transparency or information about their product performance and new ideas on how their product can perform better with changes to the design of a part, that's value added. And that's all customer facing. That's all customer centric.
Now, that's an interesting topic because you're asking a lot of companies to shift their way they even think about their relationship with their customers, and it gets to the heart of the culture of the organization. Is that a tough sell in this world?
It is, because it's really upending the way business has been for often generations.
Right.
And as we talked about that culture of change, it goes part and parcel with that. If that organization hasn't changed in decades, asking them to change to be a more customer-facing, customer-driven organization is even a steeper climb.
Now, in this interview, we've covered a lot of interesting topics. I know that you're the author of the book, No Disruptions, The New Future for Mid-Market Manufacturing. Is this some of the content that's in that book? Is this some of the things you discuss in that book?
Yes. And we actually cover almost all of these topics in that book. And the goal of that publication was really to start having that dialogue of why change is needed, what change is coming, and what the future is for manufacturers. Inherently, manufacturers don't like disruptions, which is why we titled the book as such. But it's not about disrupting manufacturing. It is about embracing change and elegantly folding it into your organization as soon as possible and starting that path. Because if you don't, the opportunity for growth and the opportunity for sustainment, that window is going to continue to close.
Now, for your organizations, authoring that book and having the website nodisruptions.com, if for people who would like to get their hands on the book or learn more about the book, is that a good kind of point of entry for people that are learning about your organization?
Yes, I think the book is a great start, especially if they're interested in learning about all the topics we discussed. In addition, you can learn more about Pragmatic and our organization and what we do at pragmatic.com. That's P-R-A-G and there's another, A-D-I-K.com.
Not a spelling book, right?
Phonetically spelled.
This is Stone speaking. Andrea, thank you so much for joining us. And we got to stay connected, and maybe we need to check in from time to time. And I'd like to dive into that whole trade show conversation some more at some point as well. But this has been an...
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so much to explore there. There's so much to be gained there. And I think... a lot of our listeners would sincerely appreciate the guidance. One more time, coordinates for getting to you and where we can get our hands on this book.
The book, No Disruptions, A New Future for Mid-Market Manufacturing, is available currently on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. And you can learn more about Pragmatic and what we do at Pragmatic.com. That's P-R-A-G-M-A-D-I-K.com. And we also author... articles and best practices about once a week, and those are found on our website as well.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show this afternoon. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, and I'd love to come back and talk trade shows.
All right, until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest this afternoon, Andrea Olson with Pragmatic, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.